chaperone can get a number. The world's in slumber, let's misbehave. There's something wild about you, child, that's so contagious. Let's be outrageous, let's misbehave. When Adam won Eve's hand, he wouldn't stand for teasing. He didn't care about those apples out of season. They say the spring means just one thing to little lovebirds. We're not above birds, let's misbehave. Let's misbehave. Let's misbehave.
If you'd be just so sweet and only meet your fate, dear, 'twould be the great event of 1928, dear.
Let's misbehave.
Hey, it's Tom. It's Hot and Cold Saturday Morning. I am your content creator for the day, in case you're wondering what this is all about. And I don't know about you. I kind of enjoy plowing, but I've had enough. and you know, we haven't had substantial snow. We've had little teeny bits here, little teeny bits there, and it's... The dilemma I get into is the fact that we have to move about 20 cars out back before it snows. Then we plow. Then we bring the 20 cars back. And then we wait a day and we move 20 cars out back again. We plow again. And this is seems to be a pattern. But we've got another week or so of this foolishness, and then maybe it'll be springtime. I don't know. Seems like it should be. I discovered yesterday, as a matter of fact, it was just yesterday with the snow. And I should know this. I deal with, you know, when you have those 20 cars to deal with and trying to stay on top of everything, does something need a windshield wiper blade? Is the battery going flat? Round and round you go. I kind of ignore my car. And I discovered yesterday, because we had a little bit more snow than before, and it's a little bit wetter snow, that I had a tire that didn't look too good. So, fortunately, my friend Gary, who, if you're looking for appliances, works in the Lowe's appliance department in Brewer, gave me four tires on rims for a Prius that he had sold. Said, you want them, I'll give them to you. They're snow tires. And I put them in my shop. Usually stuff like that just kind of becomes clutter. But I put two of them on yesterday. And, gosh, I've got traction. Go figure, huh? The dilemma is snow tires are noisier. The nice thing about baloney skin tires is they're very quiet. There's no cupping. At least there was no cupping on these. They still had tread. Wasn't much, but it was there. And I know I have at least one mechanic out there laughing, but I put on a lot of miles. I do go through tires. So as we try to get to 500,000 miles, and we're at 477, 371, something like that. So we're gaining. So that's anyway, did the tire change, and just have to turn the radio up louder. So in dealing with the weather, you know, we dress for this kind of weather. At least we should be. You should be. I am. And, you know, probably end of November, beginning of December, I start wearing thermals. And so yesterday morning, I was doing something, and I come back, and I look around my house. It's one. It's a ranch house, basically. One floor. And I go into, there's two bedrooms. I go into either bedroom, and there's stuff all over the floors, totes and boxes. And I glance and I see that the closets are empty of stuff that sits on the floor. My wife has decided the filth that we live in, the closet floors need to be cleaned. So everything came out. Everything went back in again later. In the process, the closet that I have my stuff in, there's piles of stuff on the bed along with bags of shirts I don't wear. But apparently I said, don't get rid of them. I don't remember this conversation, but, you know, that's okay. And looking at the pants, I remember, and usually I remember this in June or May, that I have two pairs of pantaloons that are lined. So I said, well, this is the time of year I should be wearing these. Usually I see them in May. It's February in Maine. I'm putting on my lined pantaloons. So I put the thermals on. I put the lined pants on over. Now, yesterday was not a cold day. I mean, you know, we're conditioned at this point. We're adjusted. We're in tune. We're out there sitting on a bucket in a shed on the ice fishing. We're on a snowmobile or making snow engines. I don't know what you're doing out there in the cold, but you're dressed for the weather. So I put on, and it's been, 7 degrees a lot of this past week. Yesterday wasn't. It was in the 30s. And so I've got double layer of stuff. And I want to tell you, I was miserable. I've been acclimated. My blood is adjusted. And so this morning, and the lined pants are heavy, which is why they've sat in the closet, I guess. So I said, okay, I don't remember. I'm sure I might have done it. But this morning, I left the thermals off. And I want to tell you, I'm in the studio here, and it's still too warm. I'd open the door to let the heat out. It's been the other way around. It's been too cold, and I'm uncomfortable. God help me if I went south for a couple of weeks. That could be a nightmare. Fortunately, I don't have that problem. It's 8:15 though, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, your phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. Lots going on this week. It's wintertime in Maine. We got to do something. So, I've been doing it. I don't know about what you've been up to. We're going to talk about it, though. We'll be right back. If I turn the microphone up, there we go. We're back. 8:18 here at the Voice of Maine. So I think it was last week somebody asked about degree days, where we're at. For the season so far, we're at 40, this is for Bangor, 4293 degree days. And on paper, at least, we're roughly in Bangor around 6,000 degree days for heating. We're a little bit under where we should be. Portland is 4,000 degree days so far for the season, so they're a little bit warmer, obviously. Last week was 328 degree days. Degree days is the average temperature, the difference between the average temperature and 65 degrees. 65 degrees being a temperature that we could live at and not die, I guess. That makes sense, and that's where we're at there. And somebody just brought this up in a text message, but I'll mention it because apparently they follow us on YouTube. We do have a channel on YouTube, and believe it or not, I have finally started posting stuff. It's called Hot and Cold Television, all spelled out. And so if you go to YouTube and you do a search, Hot and Cold Television, you'll see a bunch of videos. There's old TV shows there. There is a reasonable bit of new content based on banjos. If you want to see what I've been doing, which isn't construction, well, it's construction, but just comparing different banjos and showing what I've done. And I obviously have posted this for the banjo community, of which there's some of you out there, I'm sure. But the I finally sorted out doing content directly onto YouTube, so that's what I'm doing. And that will allow me also, now that they've shown me how to use the remote control, the old man that I am, it's not that complicated. And I'll be doing content on other things, cars and construction as well. Let's see. We got some messages here, and this was interesting. Good morning, Tom. I was excited to see in my YouTube feed a new hot and cold episode. There's actually about five or six at this point. And that you're making your own banjos at Aquarian. Will you pick us some banjo music? Yeah, I debated about bringing one, and you can see it on the YouTube a little bit. Also, lesser importance, I have a unheated tall ceiling family room that is cold. I'm deciding I'm putting in a wood or pellet stove or DIY Mr. Cool mini split. Which I would put in with the help of a non-HVAC contractor. What do you think? And also, in terms of sizing, how do I figure the heat required by the cubic feet in difference? Okay. You really need to do a heat load calculation on the space. And this would be a good one to do a YouTube on because I could write it down. You could see it. But I will explain it over the radio. When you do a heat load calculation, basically we're analyzing the thermal envelope of the building, the shell of the building that we are existing in. And there's several different surfaces. We have roof. We have a roof or ceiling. We have a floor. We have walls. We have windows and doors. Generally, the roof is all the same insulation value. The floor is as well. The walls are. Windows generally would be the same, and doors would be similar as well. So what I do is very simple calculation. The heat loss, which would be in BTUs, is a function of the area. So you measure the area. For the sake of discussion, let's say the walls are 1,000 square feet. 1,000 square feet of walls times the temperature difference. That would be the temperature you want inside and the outside design temperature. Here in Maine, it's 10 below zero. So if we're going 70 degrees inside, 10 below outside, that's what we're designing for now. That's a number of 80. So 1,000 times 80 divided by the R value. Let's say it's R10. So 1,000 times 80 would be 80,000. Divided by 10 would be 8,000. That would be the heat loss through the walls if they were 1,000 square feet insulated to R10. And you obviously plug in your own numbers. So you do that for the walls. You figure out the roof, similar number. If it's a cathedral ceiling, you have to do a little bit of math or geometry, trigonometry, to figure out the surface area. And it's, you know, if it's a flat roof versus a peaked roof, and that's exposed, the cathedral ceiling, they're different surfaces. More surface than a peaked roof, obviously. For a floor gets a little tricky because if it's over a basement, say, 1,000-square-foot floor, it's not 80 degrees between the floor and the basement. If the room is between the room and the basement, the room is 70. The basement is probably, let's say it's a cold basement. It's 35. If it's sealed off, there's no drafts coming through. It probably would never be freezing if it's underground. So the temperature difference there is 35. It's not 80. And there's some insulation value there as well. So you pull a number out of the air, R6, 8, 10, something like that. If you insulate the floor, number goes up. The insulation number goes up. So heat loss goes down. And the floor is relatively warm if it's insulated. But uninsulated, you plug the numbers in. Windows depends on what the window is. And usually I lump windows and doors together. And again, average house, maybe you got 300 square feet of windows and doors. Maybe you got 500 square feet. You plug that number, again, by 80. Divided by the R value, which is between 2 and 3 for most windows and doors. You know, if it's a double-glazed window with maybe some gas in there, some xenon or argon gas fill, it's going to be pushing 3 instead of 2. If it's just double-pane window, it's going to be 2. Single-pane window is going to be 1. So that you need to have that number, though. That doesn't normally – I don't think that happens as much as it should, but maybe it does. And I think because, you know, when you put a heat pump in, you're locked in. If it's 9,000 BTU heating, that's all you're getting out of it. You're not getting 10 or 11 or 12. You need a bigger unit. So a lot of times a bigger unit might be installed. And the beauty of a larger heat pump unit is that they do throttle back and maintain efficiency. So that helps a bit. Anyway, a choice between, as a DIY project, man, you can't beat a pellet stove. You can put that in an hour and be in business. Heat pump's going to be a little more involved. You're dealing with refrigerant lines, potential for leaks. right now, I think pellet, I haven't looked it up this morning. I have it up every other morning. I don't this morning. Pellets generally are less expensive right now than running a heat pump, I think, by a reasonable bit, given the cost of electricity. So, for what that's worth. Got some a message here. Looks like the house in Frankfurt was sold. Was it you? Ha ha. No, it was not me. That's the treat house in Frankfurt. Big old mansard house that I looked at. And it's going to be a project for sure. And my hat's off to whoever bought it. I hope they have the means to fix it. First step, get the roof fixed, get it weather tight, and then start taking stuff apart to put back together. It's going to be great when it's done. My buddy Jim down in South Bristol. Good morning, Tom. Dick Hill is smiling down on you this morning, giving out the degree days. Way to go. When's the last time you stoked up a wood boiler? It's been a while. I have no wood boilers in my life at this point. I was thinking about that. It was when I had a wood boiler at my former house. We were, you know, working on them. I would go down a week like last week, probably every other day, fire it up. Heat load was pretty low in that house. We had a 350-gallon storage tank, and that was enough to carry us for 2 days, basically. And as it got warmer out, we could go 3 days, and it worked well. I kind of miss that to some degree. I do have a wood stove that I run. And the wood stove, of course, is a completely different animal. But I've been using wood that we cut down when we put our carport in, which has been under cover for a year and is reasonably dry at this point. And then I use some scrap. You know, making banjo stuff, I have little pieces of mahogany or oak or something like that. And I have them in boxes, like in case I need it. And I grab some of it to put in the wood stove. And it just hurts. It just is like, oh, I don't get it. And then the better angels come into being. Tom, these are little pieces of scrap wood. I mean, these are little tiny, they're like 1 inch by 2 inch by half inch, something like that. I'm not going to use that for anything. I might. I do make shims once in a while. But I have enough shim material to last me the rest of my life. I don't need more shims. I don't need I don't need boxes of shims. But so it's very measured. There's not much going out into the wood stove from banjo scrap. I have to hang. I had a piece. I needed to cut a disc. I had a 3/4 inch oak. I got some reasonably nice oak at Hammond Lumber. The price was very good. It was way better than Home Depot, and they're convenient. So I got 1x8 oak, red oak. I'm 4 feet 8. I don't remember how long it was, and I needed to make a 13-inch diameter circle for a resonator, 3/4 inch thick. I biscuit it together, and I go to route it out. I've got a circle cutter with the router, and the router slips. So I adjusted the radius diameter and did it again, and it didn't work out. But I had the cutout, the piece that, you know, I had the piece I cut out, that got used, and I had the piece that was left over, which went from about zero to, I don't know, 2-3 inches, something like that, as a solid piece in the basement. Like, why are you saving that? And it's got router cuts in it. You know, the router slipped, and I cut it up the other night, and I cut the little pieces. I said, you know what? I could get a piece of wood out of here. The four corners, a little bit bigger. I'm going to save that. You never know when you're going to need it. What can I tell you? It's hot and cold Saturday morning. We'll be right back.
Every honeybee feels with jealousy when they say you are with me. I don't blame them, goodness knows. Highly sacrosanct. When you're passing by, flowers drop inside, and you know the reason why. You're my sweetest, goodness knows. Highly sacrosanct. You're my sugar. It's sweet when you stir it up. You're my sugar. It's sweet when you stir it up. When I'm taking sips from your tasting lips, in the honey fairly drips. Your confection, goodness knows, honeysuckle rose.
Jocks, 836. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning, and it is wintertime in Maine, and welcome back. Another nice day. I think it's going to be sunny. I hope it is. And we got snow tomorrow. There's something to look forward to. Hot diggity. So I borrowed a planer from my buddy Steve last week, and I had planed out some wood, and I made another banjo. And I need a thickness planer. I don't need not that much. I do, but you need one. You need one. And a good friend of mine passed away a couple of years ago, and he had a whole bunch of power tools that he had picked up at auctions that he was going to sell. So I was able to get one, and it's a Dayton. It's on a stand. And I ordered casters for it so I can have it in my shop and move it around. I can roll it outside. And the casters are coming today. I tell you what, this is a big day. I got four casters, and going to be slick. Anyway, so I made an instrument, and you can see it on the YouTube channel if you want to look. It's Hot and Cold Television, all big, one big word, all spelled out. And there's a number of posts there from this past week of different instruments that I've been making. So I was downstairs. I made the video. I posted it. And I thought, you know, I should do a count on the number of instruments because they seem to be reproducing. I'm making them. So there's more and more that show up. So I did the count. And then I went up and quizzed my dear wife, my dear patient wife, my dear loving wife of 52 years, the woman who has birthed our children, who puts up with me, who cleans the closet floors. Said, how many banjos do you think we have? And she says, I don't know, 24? I said, no. She says, higher or lower? Now, that was a silly question. Are you sitting down? It's 36. And I do have some up for sale. I'm starting to sell stuff. I started this week. And what I – well, there's a dilemma here because I just got the – just looked at the email from Bonunzio Vintage Instruments, and they posted all banjos. But I'm not buying anything from Bruno. He just, it's good to look at him. But I had a rim, a banjo rim, the round part, that I picked up years ago. It's from a very high-end builder. I'm not, I don't have the rest of the instrument. I just have the rim. And I said, well, you know, that's sitting here. I'd sold some other parts. I'm like, okay, I'm making these instruments. I don't need the parts that I'm not using because these are just things that I accumulated when I kind of was, you get that. And it was really high end. The company, if you're familiar with banjos, it's a company called Ode that was out in Colorado, made very high end or very good stuff in the 60s. They sold out, and some of the people from that company started a different company called NBN, which was the initials of the guys working there. NBN made instruments, guitars, and banjos for kind of the rock royalty of the 60s, 70s, you know, people who, Stephen Stills has an NBN banjo, people like that. So I've got this rim, and it's the highest quality one they made. Style 4 is the most they made. And I knew there was a guy who wanted to buy it on a banjo site that I'm on. So I posted it last night. I got up this morning, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning. I look at my emails, and I've got a couple of emails from the guy. He's down in Louisiana. He is a history professor, Civil War expert, and is a fanatic. I mean, he makes me seem like, you know, I got tinker toys. He wants the rim. And so I said, well, and he's helped me on some things that I'm working on. So he says, will you give me a deal? So I cut the price for him a little bit. And I said, but you have to send me pictures of this. He has the neck for this instrument that I've got the rim for. You got to send me pictures. and he sent them. I just looked at them, and I can't wait for the next break because I have to look at them. And oh my God, what a beautiful, beautiful instrument! So there will be all one. Apparently, he thinks the part that I have goes with the banjo that he has, which would be really cool to have them all back together again. Anyway, that's isn't that exciting? Let's go to the phones. All right, we could do that. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, you talked a couple of weekends ago about a frozen battery you're going to put thawed out and put on the shelf, and you're going to charge it and
yeah.
see how it panned out. I was wondering what happened there.
It came back. I took the battery out of the car. I let it thaw, sit overnight or a day, maybe 2 days. I don't even know. It was over a weekend. That's what it was. I had it on the floor, which is radiant floor, and I charged it up and put it back in the car. And you know, our cars sit there; they don't run for an hour. Like in the morning, I come to bed every day. I'm running my car for maybe an hour. You know, whether I'm going back and forth to the store or this morning I go to Bangor, that's an hour up, an hour back. These cars at our place of business get moved when it snows or somebody comes in to test drive. And the rest of the time they just sit there and,
right.
and you know, they're idling computers and stuff. This battery's still okay. So it did come back. That isn't always going to happen, but it did in this case. And it was, it was 0.0. It was nothing.
How old was it, you know?
I want to say it was 2 years old, 2 or 3 years old. It's 21 or 22, something like, you know, they have stickers on them now.
I got one that was, it's Mac 22, and it froze up pretty solid. It was pooned out on both ends pretty hard. I've got it thawed out, and I was going to give it a whirl, like, see what happens.
It's worth a shot. You know, it could be that if things are spread out, the plates or something, it might be an issue, but this one was definitely frozen. You know, you bring it in, and then all of a sudden you see the frost on the sides of it. But it's worth a try. Once it's thawed, you're not going to do anything, it ain't going to explode or do anything weird. Just go ahead, put it on a charger, and see what happens.
Put it on like a trickle charger?
I'd put it on a regular charger. You know, sometimes when batteries are really down, They need a good current flow into them to help bring them back. And again, nothing's absolute. We don't know what's going on in inside that thing, but it's worth watching. And what I do is I do monitor them. So let's say I start out and I don't have it on a sort of an intelligent charging cycle. I just have it where it's just throwing energy in, kind of uncontrolled. So it says it's 14 volts because that's what the charger's putting in, and it's maybe 14 amps. And I'm going to come back, and I want to see that current flow start to drop as it starts to receive a charge. So ultimately, and then I'll switch over to an intelligent charging cycle where it will shut itself off once the battery's fully charged. But if the battery's taken some abuse, for whatever reason, a lot of times just full power into the thing to help break down any sulfation and maybe get it starting to receive a charge is the thing to do. But, you know, again, that's something I want to monitor.
Right. I got another question concerning battery. When you start your car like this morning, how long do you have to run your vehicle to bring your battery back to where it should be sitting?
Oh, I don't know. A lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, the battery was dead. We jumped in. I ran it for 15 minutes or a half hour. That's not enough. But that's from a battery that wasn't holding enough charge. It would be a couple hours, I would say. You know, you go, if you got to go for a ride, go maybe be somewhere where you can jump it or have a jump pack if you need it. I would say till the engine warms up would be adequate for most cars.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Take care. Let's see. There we go. Um, Regarding your wife, what do you keep in the closet that requires her to clean the floors? The closets that she's cleaning are the closets she keeps stuff in. And it's knitting, and everything's in totes. So it's knitting supplies, clothing. My closet is a little bit messier in that there's usually a couple of piles of pantaloons. And she had some bags of shirts that I couldn't let go, which are now in the basement, which I will inspect. But, you know, I tend to be wear out collars on shirts. And to me, a worn collar, I mean, worn right through, you know. I kind of like that look because I'm just kind of a rumpled kind of person. So it drives her crazy. So she said, you need new shirts. So, and what she's been doing for me, and it's been fantastic, she's been getting on eBay and finding in the past couple of weeks some really nice L.L. Bean shirts. And, you know, Bean has all these stores that sell discount stuff where they have the discount sales a lot of times for employees, or they might have one. I remember years ago we went to one, I think it was in Fairfield, and it was just fantastic deals. Obviously, these are not as fantastic deals, but they're still quite economical. And their flannel shirts are great. And I need a long, tall shirt, a large, tall shirt. So otherwise, my monkey arms are too tight. We've upgraded most of my flannel shirts now. And I'm in heaven because they, you know, if I put my arms out straight, they don't come up to my elbow. The end of the shirt isn't at my elbow. So, let's see. Couple other things. I came across this years ago, and I don't know where I came across it. But and we're staying in the banjo vein because we might as well. But the thing that got me, one of the things that got me playing the banjo, two things. There was Pete Seeger, who had a TV show called Rainbow Quest, and I watched it, although he didn't always play banjo, and I was not as happy unless he played banjo, but it was that. And then the Smothers Brothers had John Hartford, and then Glenn Campbell had John Hartford, and John Hartford became the guy for me. And I got to meet John, and I actually wrote an article for him for a learned banjo journal. And I was on his Christmas card mailing list, and he lived in Madison, Tennessee. And he passed away in 2001. He had cancer, and his wife passed away on his birthday 6 months later. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, house got sold. And it's on Airbnb. You can go. I can go to John Hartford's house. He had a guest cottage, and that's the Airbnb. The house proper is not part of the Airbnb. But if I was going to Madison, Tennessee, to spend $100 a night to stay in John Hartford's cottage, which I would do in a heartbeat, I would weasel my way into the house. So I just finished reading a book about Hartford. And I'm ready. And I told Pete and Maria, said, you want to get rid of me, send me down to Madison, Tennessee, $100 a night, I'll stay at John Hartford's house. I don't need to go to Florida. Tennessee's far enough. And you can look it up on Airbnb. I don't know if it would come up if you put in John Hartford, but it is what it is. And, man. It's only 25 years too late, but oh well. Oh, gosh. I have learned a lot. Well, as I've been making instruments, I've kind of learned lessons of what to do and not do. And one of the things that I found is that a lot of the hardware that you would buy for musical instruments is made in China, and some of it, the quality is awful. And you don't always have the choice of saying, well, I don't want something made in China, because you don't know. But one of the things that I've done with the instruments that we're making is we're not using traditional banjo hardware. I'm using what is really machine-grade hardware, bolts and nuts and stuff. And I needed specific sizes. And I think I mentioned this last weekend. KL Jack, which is a statewide company, sells hardware. And they sell safety equipment and stuff for businesses. Well, Monday I was there with bells on, and they had it in stock in Bangor. I found it online. I thought, well, it's probably going to be in Portland. They got to ship it. I'm going to be waiting days. No, it was in stock in Bangor. I hightailed it up to Bangor. I got a box of what I needed for a cost that just was amazing. Had to buy it by the box. I didn't care because it was still quite economical, and I'll use them. But they're machine grade. And it says in the box, made in the U.S., and the quality was outstanding and just made my day. I run into a similar thing with tuners, you know, for tightening up the strings. It got in my head, well, you know, if you look on eBay, you can find tuners for $30 for a set of four or five, whatever. Well, we'll try them. I got a set, and they weren't fantastic, but they weren't horrible. I got another set. The second time I might have ordered two sets or even three sets because they were cheap, cheaper than the regular vendors who sell these things. And cheap is cheap. These were I did learn how to take apart tuners, geared tuners, to lubricate them or do whatever. Because obviously if they went together, they come apart. But the quality just wasn't there. And I was able to use enough. I was able to put enough together to not feel like I was really ill-used. But I quickly learned, especially when it comes to the one thing you do within a musical instrument, you turn the tuners. You're always tuning the instrument. And you want something that feels smooth when you turn it and holds, doesn't spin backwards or whatever. So, no, Tom, okay, lesson learned. We will get the better quality tuners that I think are might be made in Japan, but they are head and shoulders different. They're probably three times the cost, two and a half times the cost. Well worth it. And especially, you know, if I'm making an instrument, and I've got instruments I got to go back and change out tuners before I would sell them. But if I made an instrument for you and I sold it to you and the tuners are awful, you're not going to be happy with me, and you're not going to want to use the instrument. So there. Tuners. Just one of those things. You know, it's just a learning curve kind of thing. And the few moments I got left here, the one thing, you know, I'm working on, it, again, if you look at Hot and Cold Television on YouTube, you'll see what I'm doing, which is different. Not all of the ones I've made worked, and I have a stack of they've been disassembled, but a stack of what didn't work sitting on a chair. It's about 2 feet tall of bits, but that's part of inventing, creating, whatever you want to call it, is finding out the things that don't work. So when you get something that does work, A, it's great. B, you know, you all that stuff you did that was like, you know, I just wasted 2 days doing this, and it doesn't matter because you know what doesn't work and you figured out what works. So anyway, we got to take a break. It is time. It's 8:55. It's the Voice of Maine. It is Hot and Cold, and we'll be back next hour. Pete will probably be here. He ain't going to be plowing snow today. right, we're back. It's 9:06, hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. And I got to look up my banjo emails this morning from the guy who's going to buy the NBN pot. He forgot. Oh, this instrument is incredible. And these are like really, really high end. And as I say, they only made about four banjos, I think, one of which Steven Stills owns. He's not sure. He owns a couple of them. I mean, this guy is like a crazy, apparently rich collector. And he forgot that I also have a tone ring for this banjo. So I just sent him a message. He probably just wet his pantaloons on that one. I have it in another banjo. I've got to take apart to get it out, but I will do that just so it's all back together. But it's over the top. I mean, everything's engraved, everything's inlaid, and it's got provenance. So okay, I'll calm down. I mentioned first hour that I picked up a thickness planer, and it didn't work when I got it. It looked good. It's on a stand. It looked like it was in good repair. Had an extra set of knives, and turned it on. Nothing happened. Turned it off. Turned it back on. I went, and then it shut off again. And I could see the brushes were arcing. So I went to remove the brushes, and they wouldn't come out. So it took me a little while. I got the brushes out. And I actually used some WD-40 to get them loose and was able to get them out. Then I cleaned everything with contact cleaner, let it sit overnight. And I came in the next morning. I just sanded down the brushes ever so slightly on the sides, put it back in, and it works like a charm. So that's done. And I got casters coming today for it. I sold a banjo part this week to a guy in Kentucky. And I sent it U.S. Postal Service, and it's not there yet. I sent it Monday. It's not there yet. Maybe today. It would be nice. He's not frantic, but it would just be nice to have it to him. I ordered casters, like, Wednesday, and they're coming today. Same U.S. Postal Service. So I guess casters have the fast track. I'm not sure what they banned. Maybe banjo parts go underneath, hold doors open and stuff because they're heavier. I don't know. Anyway, what else? So I have a test going on, and my daughter thinks it's hilarious. I have a bottle of water in my car. And with these cold mornings we've had, it's always frozen. It's just a big ball of ice. And for me, it's kind of entertaining to see how much it will thaw during the course of the day. And every so often there's enough thawing if we have to go somewhere, the heat's on, that I get a nice cold water because there's water surrounded by ice. So it doesn't take much to keep me entertained. What can I tell you? I got in the car this morning. I finished the water yesterday. I had thawed because it was, 34 degrees? Like springtime. Water thawed. I didn't have that much. It was like 3 tablespoons. I drank the water. So, I need a new water for Saturday morning to see what's going to happen. And I've used maybe a quarter of the bottle. It's a, half pint bottle, something like that. I get in the car this morning. It hasn't frozen at all. It's 7 degrees where I live, and it had not frozen. And why is that, boys and girls? Well, because to go from 32-degree liquid water to 32-degree ice, there's to go from 33 degrees to 32, let's say it takes a BTU to change change that temperature by 1 degree, drop 1 degree. To go from 32-degree water to 32-degree ice takes 100 BTUs because you're changing phase. And we didn't get there because we had some mass. The car was warm when I parked it. I got home at 4, so it's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 12 hours. That makes sense, doesn't it? 13 hours. I left at 5 o'clock. But there was enough mass in that bottle. The water was already warm enough, apparently, that it took a while to cool down, but it didn't change phase. No hint of ice in the bottle. And this is the thing about thermal mass. And a lot of times, if folks are trying to do some kind of scheme where they can store heat, you have a wood stove and you want to store energy in the structure. We were doing it with Dick Hill and I were doing it with tanks of water in the basement, which we could draw off of later. A lot of people just add mass. This is a really important thing when it comes to trying to plan out your building. In addition to being well insulated, you really need to have mass in the structure. And years ago, and I don't endorse this, but folks would have containers of water around the building because of that ability of water to store a tremendous amount of energy. Now, the thing is, it's a function of temperature change. So if it's just sitting in the room with you, what can you heat it up to? It's wintertime in Maine. Maybe you got a wood stove. Maybe it gets up to 80. You're starting to feel maybe a little uncomfortable if it drops below, say, 67. That's only 13 degrees. It's not a tremendous amount of energy that you can store in that volume of water, and even unless it's a tremendous amount of water, which usually it wouldn't be. I mean, where do you put water in your house to store energy? Whereas when you have it in an insulated tank, and you go down, if it's a radiant slab, you can go down to maybe 80 degrees, but you can heat the tank to 180 degrees and then just draw off energy as you need it. And so if you had 1,000 gallons of water or 500 gallons, or in my case, I had 350 gallons, it would carry me a couple days because the heat load was low. And these, there's interplay here between when you're trying to design a system like this. And that holds true for solar, too. Solar is a different solar thermal, which is stuff I used to make. It's a kind of a different animal because we do have some limitation in terms of sunlight this time of year. But we found some interesting things when we did our project up in Orono. Dick wanted me to mount the solar collectors vertical. And I kind of cringed. But when you mount them vertical, you really optimize performance for summertime. For wintertime. I'm sorry. For summertime, they'd be more or less horizontal. But he wanted them vertical, and it was a convenient way to mount them. And they're still there. I believe they're probably still functioning. And it minimizes performance in summertime a bit, not a lot, but it helps mitigate it if you have a big system for heating. And what we found was any sunny day, it heated the building, and it's a very big building. It's a well-insulated building. And there's a lot of thermal mass, a radiant floor that we heat up. The additional thing was that if there was snow on the ground, we got about a 30% performance bump by sunlight reflecting off the snow onto the vertical collectors. And something they're doing in Germany and other places, not just Germany, but I just saw it in a thing the other day. They're using this for fencing now for solar electric panels. It's not, if you use it as a fence, if you stop and think about it, ideally, it should be 45 degrees to optimize for year-round use. That's kind of a hassle when you're building. If you got something 45 degrees, you've got to build a structure for it, and it's angled, and angles are a pain in the neck. So, if it's vertical, first of all, you don't lose any. You use minimal ground space, but you get this performance bump when there's snow on the ground, which we have been blessed with snow on the ground. So, anyway, for what it's worth, I got to take a break. It is 9:15. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478.
Make my bed with a crease in the middle. Make my home in the Woodish Hills. Then I make my living with a hillbilly fiddle, playing little runs and loving little pills. Well, I got me a gal from playing on my fiddle, and the harder that I fiddle, oh, the harder that she comes along. But we gotta get happy when we wiggle in the middle. That's when I know when I'm gonna come home. Play fiddle, play all day long. I hear you screaming at me way far away in the yard.
All right, we're back to 9:20. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. John Hartford in what is, I think, his best album ever. Was not commercially successful when it came out, and it has become the, I think, one of the go-to bluegrass albums of all time. Aeroplane, it's called. Came out in 1971, I think. 70 or 71. And it's a classic. What can I tell you? Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-447. Oh, we got a whole bunch of messages here. First one was, I made a mistake. I apologize. Changing phase, water changing phase, 1 ounce of water from 32-degree water to 32-degree ice is 1,000 BTUs, not 100. I was off a little bit. So, thank you. Oh, my goodness. Ask me a banjo question. You know, I've directed away from heating stuff a lot. And, all right, and somebody sent this in kilojoules. I'm not going into the kilojoules, okay? Thank you for that. But not that it matters, but in the grand scheme of things, I think the latent heat of fusion of water was 144 BTUs per pound. It's more than that. Anyway. Oh, let's see. What else we got? No phone calls. We haven't heard from Pete yet. Go through my list. Oh, I've been reading. How's that for a time? And I tell you what, that is. So I got a theme song for the next part of our show. And here it is.
The monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. And the buzzer tried to throw the monkey off of his back. The monkey grabbed his neck and said, "Now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right." I said, "Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top."
So, if there's one guy I know who will straighten up and fly right, that's probably Pete. Good morning, Pete.
Is it possible to buy a bear cub?
I don't know. Wouldn't that be fun?
Like somewhere?
We could trade it.
Well, the way I figure it, yeah, that's just it, is I figure, like, I was watching this video of a bear cub, and I think if I got one young enough, I could get it to imprint, you know, the whole bottle feed thing, that young, and get it to imprint upon me and think that I'm its mother. That I could be, you know, I could raise it and be one of those dudes who's just got a bear that's like a dog.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's not allowed where it's a wild animal. But it's,
I'm not asking if it's allowed. I'm asking if it's anybody's listening, if you know where, like, maybe I could get one.
Straighten up and fly right, Pete. Okay?
Hey. America, all right? Our founding fathers didn't make this country so that we could not have bear cubs, all right? Why do you think we even came to this land? Because it's got bears.
Oh, see, I learned something today.
You ever seen a if you ever get a chance, look up videos of black bears running up or down trees.
Yeah,
it is the most terrifying thing ever.
It is.
They run up trees at like 30 miles an hour.
Yeah. Well, hey,
that's what I want. I want like that, but as a pet.
Okay. Maybe you could transition laterally a little bit to something that would be easier to get and maybe not kill you at some point while you were asleep?
It's not going to kill me. I think it would be fun because everybody brings their dog to the grocery store now.
Yeah.
With that little patch on it that they bought on Amazon.
How about a duck? A duck you can get, and Dell's will imprint real easy. You just get
how
the.
How do you make the leap from a bear to a duck?
Because a duck is you. I can get you eggs right now. Duck eggs, and I can borrow the incubator. And when that little baby duck comes out of that shell, first person it sees is you and your mom and dad and every its whole world, and it'll follow you everywhere.
I know that. Here's the issue is everybody likes a duckling that follows you around, meh, 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 meh. But then the problem is the duckling becomes a duck, and there's a reason there's a phrase, slick as duck stuff. And it's because ducks discharge is so foul.
You can get diapers for them.
I'm not putting a diaper on a duck. I'll put a diaper on a bear because that's a worthwhile investment.
A diaper on a bear will be an enterprise, and I want to tell you it's got to be a big diaper because I used to see bear droppings in the woods when I worked in the woods. It was not. You think ducks are bad. Ducks, we're talking a different volumetric amount. How's breakfast going out there in Radio Land?
Who's going to stop me at Target and be like, hey, you got to clean up your bear's poop? I'll be like, you tell him he's got to clean it up. I'll get a wide berth. Well, the comedian Bill Burr, he's talking about he's got a pit bull, right? And he was saying it's the best. He's like, I walk down the street with that thing. People cross the street. Everybody leaves me alone.
Okay. Just to go back for a moment, there seems to be... I'm completely confused. I've given out. I was talking about water freezing and the amount of energy it takes, and I'm gonna have to research it. I've just got a message here that says it's about 1,200 BTUs per gallon for a phase change, and I'm looking at the numbers, and those numbers are jiving more than the other number I got, which was 1,000. So I was saying, I have to apologize because I have not had my head in heating numbers for how many years? 5 years, four years.
Yeah.
And so that part of my brain has gone by. So I apologize. You're right. And that's where I was getting the 1,000 from by the gallon. Okay. Thank you. I'm glad somebody out there is covering me because Pete's not doing it. He's talking about bears, for crying out loud, and bear droppings. You ready to plow again?
I'm so excited for tonight's snow and then Wednesday's snow and then next weekend's snow.
Yeah, it'll be great. I think next weekend's the big one.
Next weekend's forecast has dropped down a little bit. Last night they were saying 5 to 8 Saturday night, 5 to 8 Sunday night, and 1 to 3 Sunday. But now it's down to 1 to 3 Saturday night, 3 to 5 Sunday, and then 1 to 3 Sunday night. So it's practically a dusting.
Okay. Yeah. We're used to
it. The problem is we're running out of space we've still got space to put the snow. It's just now I can't just plow it off to the side, so I've got to, like, push it around to get it where it needs to be so I can push it off to the side. So it's taking longer to plow.
Yeah. Well.
But. I don't know. It's something to do, I guess.
I guess. It's better to be.
I don't know if people are aware of this, but in between snowstorms, we are selling cars.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Yeah. I've usually got everything cleared off and put back by, before lunchtime.
Yeah. So. If you want to come in and you see no cars in the driveway during business hours, if it's not snowing, do come in because Pete will get the car out from back for you, or we could march you out back, I guess, if we had to.
You mean if after it's not snowing anymore?
Yeah, yeah. Not while it's snowing.
Yeah, because obviously, don't come. Like, I'll talk to you about cars while it's snowing, but we're not. I can't. If there's ice back there, I can't have everybody marching around on snow over ice to look at cars that are all jammed together, trying to keep out. I tell you, this is the truly most miserable time of year to be a car dealer too, because we have to move every car, plow everything, clear every car off, move them all back, plow where the cars were. And then do it all again if it snows even an inch.
It's great fun. I mean, it keeps us from being bored.
Yeah.
Got a message here from Dave and Bradley. So there was an article in Paper Talks, I believe, a couple of years ago about a family who raised a bear cub. The human mother nursed the cub and played with the kids. Eventually, it went to a man in Massachusetts. Damn those people in Massachusetts who would take it out for a walk and golfing and things like that. But eventually, the bear got too rough for him. He had to get rid of it.
Well, that's because the bear wasn't imprinted on him.
That's right.
I don't even understand that. Like, if you've got a bear cub that you've raised, right, number one, why would you get rid of it? But if you did, why would you just, like, I don't know, give it to some guy in Massachusetts? Like, wouldn't, like, a preserve or something make more sense?
I guess. I got another message.
Boston's interested.
Another message here. You can buy bears, tigers, and lion cubs and several species of exotic animals with proper permits. Just Google exotic animal. This gives Pete something to do this morning. Just Google exotic animals for sale. You can speak English, Tom.
I've seen a number of videos of people that have gotten monkeys too. Mind you, not apes like chimps and orangutans and stuff, but like little spider monkeys. And they're fantastic videos because it's just the thing is just running around the dude's apartment at like 60 miles an hour, knocking things down, swinging off of stuff, jumping on the dog, jumping off the dog. Just losing its mind, having a great time. And I'm like, that's it. I want a little monkey that's just going to tear things apart.
You remember the Malcolm in the Middle episode with the monkey?
I don't. You know, I've never actually seen that many episodes of that show. What I've seen is very good, but I've never seen the whole show.
Well, this is something else you can do this weekend. Watch old Malcolm in the Middle episodes. or
the Malcolm in the Middle monkey episode.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. I'm going to stop reading stuff about phase change until I get the numbers myself and bone up on it, because I'm going to misquote and then everybody's going to be confused. Nobody's going to understand phase change. Oh, so let's change the subject. Oh, we can't change the subject. We've got to take care of some business here. And then I've got a quiz for Pete. I can tell you're excited. Aren't you?
I am. What is it?
Just wait. I'll tell you. I'm going
to
give it.
Fill the dead air while you cue something.
No, I'm going to give it. No, I didn't have to cue anything up. I'm going to give it to you now because.
Okay.
How many banjos do I have? Don't answer. We got to take a break.
Okay.
All right.
You came along and everything started in to hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come. Best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be...
Start with them.
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. But then if you're so smart, tell me why are you still so afraid? Where's the fire? What's the hurry about? You better cool it off before you burn it out. You got so much to do in only so many hours in the day. You want, or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, when will you realize the inner waits for you?
All right, we're back, 9:37. I just want to mention our friends at General Appliance on Center Street in Brewer. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, they're open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. Phone number is 989-4341, and they will help you make things work right. Boy, that's more like I say for myself this morning. I keep confusing the numbers, but Pete, I've got the actual numbers here for the latent heat of fusion and latent heat of vaporization of water, because I know you want to know this.
I do. I've been thinking about it the whole break. I couldn't sleep last night.
Everybody keeps throwing numbers at me, and I just wanted to make sure I didn't misquote because I've been misquoting them all morning. Okay, so for freezing, water to ice is 144 BTUs per pound of water. Okay. So to go from water to water vapor is 970 BTUs. Big, big difference there. So, all right. So speaking of numbers, I counted the banjos last night. Give me a number.
Now, is this
everything.
The total number?
Total everywhere.
Is this the public-facing number that you don't want to get committed?
Every location I have. Your mother already knows. So I'm not going to.
The ones in the shop.
Shop, basement, house. That's three locations.
I'm going to say 33.
Boy, you're close. 36.
I was going to say higher or lower. Well, that's not. Yeah, but here's the thing: is it might have been 33 yesterday, and then last night you made three, and then.
Well, I only made one yesterday. I literally made one yesterday morning. It was just assemble. I didn't. I mean, you know, well, that's kind of what I do anyway: is assemble stuff. But yeah, I put one together yesterday, and finished it last night. Just for it is a test instrument. So
I know a lot of Star Wars guys like this who like they say they're going to sell. And they just acquire things, and then they never sell them?
No, I put some parts up last night, and one of them is a rim for a very high-end instrument. And I know the guy, I specifically put the ad out, and I knew the guy would want it, and he's going crazy. And I just messaged him. I haven't looked at my email, but I also have the tone ring for that banjo. And he's got the rest of the banjo, the same instrument that it came from. Now, because there are only four of these instruments made, and they were really high end. And somehow I found the parts on eBay and bought them. And he wants.
How long ago was that?
Oh, God. About 6 years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago, and he's tickled. I think that there might be an email on. You could look at the emails. You'll see the pictures. So he sent pictures this morning. I said I'll sell it to you. He's helped me on some stuff. So he said you give me a little bit of a deal, and I did. I said, but I want to see pictures of the rest of the instrument, and he sent it. So. Somebody has guessed 12 complete banjos and 30 as spare parts. I'm not counting spare parts. These are all assembled. These are all put together.
These are 100% ready to go. This is like, you know what, when Prince died, the musician?
Yeah.
He apparently had a vault, and it was filled with albums and music videos and all this stuff that was completely done and finished, but it had never been released. Because the plan was for his estate to release these things incrementally over the years to continue what I guess he thought his legacy was. I don't know why he thought it goes past 1990, but for some reason. And that's sort of what this feels like, is like you're making banjos so that the banjos can continue after you're long gone.
Well,
does Tom keep dropping all these
well,
banjos?
If I get hit by a truck when I walk out of here, there'll be Tom is dead, and these are going to be worth something, which it probably wouldn't happen. But a lot of them I might redo. Well, I'm going to redo a lot of them just because there's things I want to change. I want to put in different tuners and stuff. But, and there hasn't been a glaring demand yet, but we don't have the website up or the Facebook page. I've just been posting YouTube stuff. Got a message here. Pete's scenario about the bear making a mess in Target gives a new meaning to clean up at aisle 5. Where did that come from? Did you say something about a bear making a mess in Target? Did I miss that?
Yes, because the bear, people bring their.
Oh, okay, animals, okay,
we were
I got
talking
you.
About
yeah.
the duck,
yeah.
And I was saying if I've got a service bear with me in Target and it goes, I mean, like you tell the bear I got to clean it up.
Well, you know, the thing is, the duck could fit in the shopping cart. The bear ain't fitting in the shopping cart, and that's a problem. If it was a bear cub, it would. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So. All right. Or a beaver? How about a beaver?
So we got banjos. We got bears defecating in retail establishments.
Yeah. How about a
we
beaver?
Got phase change material.
A beaver would
beaver?
be beaver would be more compact animal to have following you around, and it would flap its tail on the floor.
Yeah, but it would always be chewing on stuff. There was I saw a video of these people. They rescued a beaver, right? It was a baby beaver, and it had never, the thing had never like been in like moving water before. It was that young when they got it, and they just lived in their house with them, and it would instinctively make dams out of stuff. It would just make dams across hallways using the kids' toys and things.
Yeah. Oh God, that's just cool.
That's very interesting to me.
When we were doing the TV show. If I found a place where there was a beaver dam, I had to stop and do a segment on it because it's just absolutely one of the coolest things ever to see what they do. And obviously, they could be a major nuisance, but on the other level, it's just kind of amazing what they accomplish. And remember when we had the construction going on Route 1 in Searsport? We had a detour. On the detour to go to Belfast, there was a place where there was a stream, and right next to it was probably 8 feet off the road, and it was like grass and then some aspen trees, and beavers were chewing on them. They're right there. So, I go by once a week. We go to the grocery store, and you see the tree. It's chewed down to a nub. Then the tree's gone the next week, and then other trees being worked on, and it's just – it's just cool. And unfortunately for me and for you, I have a lot of beaver videos on my Facebook feed that we get to see. But they're entertaining. And here's the thing: if we had a beaver, maybe we could teach it to chew out banjo necks. You ever think of that?
I was going to say we get to have it take down some of the trees we want cut down.
Or
we've got this one patch of trees up front for the listening public, and so we've got the pavement this year, and we were very excited to see how that would go. And it's a dream to plow, and it as soon as the sun comes out, the snow melts, except for the exact shape of the shadow of those trees on the other side.
Yep.
It doesn't, it won't, it's not melting over there. It'll melt a little bit.
But. Well, we were taking them down. We had to stop because we had to get a CMP in to deal with the wires because they passed through these trees.
Yeah, well, then the next three, they have to come down in the direction of wires, so those have to come down. But then the next two after that, the neighbor's power goes right between the branches. So there's really no good way to do that without disconnecting everybody's power, which I think he'd be okay with just because, it would solve the issue, the inevitable issue someday of a branch taking out their power and the tree having to come down anyway.
Yeah. So, and it will it'll get rid of the pine needles in the front. I hate cutting down those trees, but, excuse me, the pine needles on the cars is a bit of a hassle.
Yeah. You got to jump on those when they get on there because otherwise you're fighting with sap.
Yeah.
So we got enough trees. There's plenty of them.
We do have a lot of trees. So,
Allagash.
What did we put out this week that's new? Anything?
I don't think anything new went out this week. The 2016 Prius sold. So that one's gone.
Yeah.
I don't think anything new got out. It was kind of a slow week as far as getting stuff ready goes. So I still got all the other good stuff.
Yeah,
I am starting to get the tax season starting to creep in. So if you're eyeballing something, I would suggest coming and looking at it sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting all the inquiries where it's clearly the exact amount they got back for taxes. Because they're like, "What do you have for $4,236?" Nothing. But
oh man, it's. And I think we've pretty much caught up. We have a couple. We have three 2013 Corollas, one of which is out. The other two are almost out, but they're all the same car, basically. So it doesn't matter if the other two aren't quite ready yet because the one that's out is fine.
You know why that one's so popular, actually, why you run into so many 13s is because I think it was the following year they went to a CVT.
Oh.
For some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Toyota CVT, and it's a lot more reliable than, say, a Nissan CVT, provided you do your fluid maintenance.
Yeah.
But, that always makes people nervous.
Sure. And I have to tell you, this morning I had traction you wouldn't believe.
What, because you had tires with tread on them?
Yeah, what a concept, huh? Especially with
he's out there screwing around. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm swabbing out my front tires. I look at the front tires, Karen, it looks like the dad's spare tire from A Christmas Story. Just like I could see my reflection in it.
I didn't realize it was so bad. I hadn't looked at it. You know, everything's covered with dirt and snow and stuff, and I just kind of lost track. And
the wear doesn't look even, so I checked, probably get the suspension checked, too.
Yeah, I think it's getting to be about strut time.
Yeah.
That's a project when I get the rest of the cars out of the shop.
You got dinner time, lunch time, strut time.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you'll be happy to know the casters for the planer are coming today.
I knew there were going to be casters in that planer's future. Yeah, just so you can have it roll around on you while you're shoving pieces of wood through it.
No, they're locking casters. These are not regular casters.
Locking casters. Okay, so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Since you have casters coming specifically for this, but you also have a shelf full of casters, could we get rid of some of the casters?
No, because they're not bothering.
Decades,
you know, you're like your mother here.
Casters. There's constantly casters. You're always buying them, and Kurt will show up with casters from 1973, and you're like, I'll take them.
Hey.
And they go on the shelf. You'll find something you can attach them to.
I will. We'll put them on something. We'll roll around. But here's the thing. You don't know this. Thursday, Kurt came back with that junk thing in the back of his truck.
Son of a gun. How much of it is in the shop?
I didn't take it. Okay.
What if we put all the desks on casters in here, right? So then when people come in, like the desks all just move around a little bit. Like, why do they do that? I'm like, oh, it's because of the casters. They're like, why are the casters? I'm like, so it can move around.
We could do that.
You want it to move around? No.
Pete, I got casters in the shop. We can put them right on.
Let's put casters on just Maria's desk.
Oh, that'd be funny. We keep turning her desk around. Every time she goes out to do something, we turn it 90 degrees. That'd be fun. We could do that.
We'll put casters on her desk, but we'll lower the we'll raise the chair so the desk is too low.
Oh, poor Maria. Did she tell you about the frozen pipe?
No, but I saw the thing. It was just they didn't use it.
I it's weird because it wasn't the weather wasn't that different, but she had a lavatory cold water pipe kind of fetch up on her, and then it just freed up again. But I said, you know, you got to check in the basement. There's got to be a little bit of a draft there. That just caught it right. She did open the vanity doors, and apparently enough heat got in, so it was right there. And I explained to her, you know, you can kind of feel when if you have a frozen PEX pipe, you can feel where it's frozen.
Yeah,
it just feels a little bit different, or you can flex it just a little bit, and you'll hear the ice crackling, which is always fun to do. Let's see. I guess we know why everyone was speeding by you last week.
What?
I'm not sure. By
you?
Yeah.
Like in Louisiana?
No, passing me. Passing me? Because last weekend I was driving slow. Well, I was driving slow anyway. I mean, you know, I'm not going to. But now I've got snow tires on.
I don't understand people that speed and stuff. Like, I watch them as they go, like, you know, yesterday, last storm, I'm here, and I'm watching cars just go screaming by.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I get it. You got traction.
Yeah.
How are you going to stop if you need? Like, I'm not saying you're not a good driver. You're a great driver. Not you, but the euphoric, you know, whoever's listening, and they're like, I drive fire from the phone. You're a great driver. But what about the people that aren't? What if somebody just skids into your lane? I mean, you're not going to be able to stop. What if some kid goes chasing out after a ball? You know, or there's a deer or something, and you go skidding off all over the place. It's weird. You see those videos of pileups on the highway in bad weather, and it's amazing to me how fast every single person is going without any ability to see what's ahead or any ability to stop.
Yeah,
it's like you're gonna. What are you gonna lose by going a little bit slower? 10 minutes, maybe.
Well,
you're gonna lose a lot more if you got to sit there for 3 hours waiting for a tow truck.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to me there's more cops out monitoring traffic lately. Unfortunately, I never see him when somebody passes me doing 80 miles an hour on Route 1, which just happened the other day. And I was not moving slow. I was probably in a 50, 55 zone doing 60, 65, and this guy came up.
In Tom's defense, he's got a bit of a lead foot when the weather's not inclement.
Yeah. I think you tell me if I'm wrong about this. If you're in a Prius, especially an older Prius, and somebody comes up behind you in a truck, they feel it incumbent that they have to pass you because you're in a Prius. Doesn't matter if you're doing 70 miles an hour or not. They have to pass you. It's a psychological thing. It's probably a guy thing.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, I'll go the opposite side of that, though, as far as, like, the dude in the truck goes. And I don't know what this behavior is. But any time I am on some sort of back route, like, you know, Route 69 or something like that, I cannot tell you how many, you know, turns you turn or hills you crest, and there's some guy in a truck riding the center line, and I mean well over it, like he's afraid to be in his lane because, you know, the sides of the roads are always a little bit swollen in this time of year.
Yeah.
But they're always, like, over in your lane enough that you know, in a couple occurrences I've had to swerve and I've had to lay on the – one time I had to hit the horn 5 times in a 10-mile span. From people just – usually they're in a truck, you know, because they're big, wide vehicles. So I think it kind of forces them to gravitate towards the middle of the road. But they need to understand that there's two lanes, and we're all going to die if we hit each other.
Yeah. Somebody said same with minivans. People in minivans tend to swerve. Yeah, I've seen that a lot. But, yeah.
They ride that.
That might be screaming kids in the back, though, because you can't reach them to hit them. You know,
I saw that once, though. I was in Belfast, and, like, I was coming out of, like, where O'Reilly's is, and this minivan is going by, and, you know, I'm waiting to turn out, and the dad is driving, and I see him turn around, and the entire, like, two-thirds of his body goes into the back of that van. Like, and it was like, I could tell the turn. I knew what that turn was. That was the screaming kids, or they're being bad or something, and somebody's getting smacked, just, like, spins right around. He's in the back of that van, still driving with the other hand.
Well, you guys, you know, we had four kids, and all four of you'd be in the van at some point.
I always sat in the back of the van.
I don't recall, maybe you do, my having to slow down and turn around and scream. You guys were pretty well behaved in the car.
Yeah. So. You know, honestly, from some of the cars we've seen, I'll say this, we were pretty clean.
Oh, my God, yes.
As far as cars we've gotten that have had evidence of children in them,
yeah,
we were extremely neat and tight.
Very neat. Yeah, but you're your mother's children, so, and I appreciated that, and I still do. So, but we're out of time, Pete. So, you know, if you're bored today, you got a day, it ain't going to snow, you want to have something to do, I can't think of a better thing to do than go to Stockton Springs and say hi to Pete. Can you, Pete?
I cannot. Brian, I'm going to call you back shortly if you're listening.
Okay.
Got your message.
All right. Thanks, Pete. Right. See you all next week.
Be all the me, I guess, when the sun doesn't shine. But there's that pocket full of miracles. And with a pocket full of miracles.